Author Paul Theroux has been keeping busy with a new collection of short stories he's written set in Hawaii, New England, and Africa. He tells us about The Vanishing Point in just a bit. And actor Martin Sheen reveals how filming on location has shown him realities that changed his worldview. That's all in the hour ahead. Today, we're marking 20 years since the very first edition of our weekly radio program. To produce it, I brought in Tim Tatton, who had been working in public radio in Ohio, Alaska, and the California wine country. In a few months, we started releasing an hour a week of travel-themed conversations, talking with all kinds of authors, guides, artists, and astronauts, and even with listeners like you, about their adventures and where they'd like to travel next. 20 years and nearly 800 episodes later, you can now hear Travel with Rick Steves on more than 500 stations, ranging from the Arctic shores of Ukiah, Alaska, to the Gulf waters of Key West, and from Agonia, Guam, to the far reaches of the American Forces Radio Network. Let's take a few minutes to remember just a sampling of the people whose company we've enjoyed over the past two decades, starting with a bicycling enthusiast we chatted with on our very first episode back in 2005.
I always tell people, you know, if you want to live your life in fear, spend an hour or two in front of the television set and make sure you're, you know, read the newspaper from cover to cover every single day. And if you want to think this world's a pretty amazing place, go travel around it or get on a bicycle and do it.
Willie Weir's advice still sounds good to me. A few years later, best-selling humorist David Sedaris stopped by to tell us about how he was navigating the cultural differences of moving to France. The hour we spent with David became one of our most all-time listened-to podcasts of the show.
I went to French school when I moved to Paris because I didn't speak any French. And I said to the teacher one day, she was telling us how to introduce people. And I said, well, how would you introduce someone as your boyfriend or your girlfriend? And she said, you wouldn't. She said, it's nobody's business who you're sleeping with. So sometimes I find that discretion maddening, and sometimes I like it. But it's hard for an American because, especially when I first moved there, because I'm used to America. In America, you can say to somebody, God, I love your shoes. How much do they cost? Really? And how much does your watch cost? How much money do you make a year? If your shoes cost that much and your watch cost that much, how much do you make? Oh, you're divorced? How much do you have to pay in alimony? And I love that. And you cannot get away with that.
So that would be New York banter at a party. But you just couldn't do it in Paris, huh?
No, not at all. And in New York, you begin by saying, how much rent do you pay or how much did you pay for your apartment? And you just can't do it there.
Oftentimes, I find that my travels show me how much more alike we are than we realize, even across different languages and cultures. Maeve Higgins has been getting to know refugees and immigrants settling in New York City, and she's compared their experiences to her own coming from Ireland. She also told us how surprised she was to discover how similar some things could be in Iraq compared to back home in County Cork.
What happens when you travel, too, if you're lucky enough to get out to travel. Like, I went to Iraq to do a comedy workshop in Erbil, which, you know, is in Kurdistan up in the north. And something that I was completely taken aback by was, like, everyone offers you tea all the time. And I was just like, oh, this is exactly like Ireland. Everyone in Ireland is obsessed with tea. If you say no, they just think you're being polite. So they just keep saying, like, have another, have a cup. Just have, no, it's no bother at all. I put the kettle on now. And you're like, okay, in the end, you just take the tea. And it was the exact same in Kurdistan. Just like, you will drink this tea. And it was just reminded me of my mom.
Another Irish guest who brought us a real eye-opening conversation was Lord John Alderdice. He's had a position in Britain's House of Lords as a Liberal Democrat from Northern Ireland since 1996, after representing Belfast East for many years in the government of Northern Ireland. Lord Alderdice explained for us how he participated in negotiating the Good Friday Agreement, the agreement that finally ended the troubles in Northern Ireland back in 1998. It redesigned how the government would work there after recognizing the disturbed historic relationships between its people. I think you'll find that what he had to tell us in 2008 is just as important for us today.
If you analyze things in terms of political positions or moralistic terms, then you will get people divided. Let's talk about people as people, and that's a very different way of viewing it. Security measures on their own will never solve the problem. These are problems of relationships. They are political problems. And the only way they're going to be resolved in the end is by people sitting down and talking with each other. Mm-hmm. And think about those not as some alien group, but as human beings, as people with the same feelings and fears and thoughts and ambitions as you. Politics is not about how we agree with each other. Politics is about how we disagree without killing each other.
That's Lord John Alderdice, as we look back on just a few of our most memorable guest interviews over 20 years of travel with Rick Steves. Another favorite guest of ours has been writer and conservationist Terry Tempest Williams. She told us how learning to make mosaics in Italy helped her to find beauty in a broken world. And after traveling to Rwanda in the wake of their devastating civil war, she found encouraging life lessons in the rubble.
And it's not to romanticize poverty, certainly, mm-hmm. or war, but I think it's perspective. And what I realized in Rwanda with the horrors that took place there, what I realized is that on one hand, angels, on the other hand, demons, good, evil, how do we bring our hands together in prayer? And that if a human being is capable of this kind of atrocity, then I too am capable of that. And if a human being is capable of this kind of forgiveness, then I too am capable of that. And I think it brought me into a much deeper sense of my own humanity. And perhaps that's the gift of travel.
Terry's poetic writing about her beloved Utah desert home and the struggle to preserve lands considered sacred by its native communities have made her a public lands activist. For years, she's been calling on us to preserve America's open spaces and national parks from being exploited to enrich the few. But she told us that didn't come easily.
You know, I was raised not to speak out, not to rock the boat, make waves. And suddenly, because of the land that I love and the threat that it is under, this beautiful Red Rock wilderness, I have spoken out with many, many others. Hmm. And I think there are some people that wish that I hadn't or wouldn't. And I just think if we care about the land, if we care about the open space of democracy, if we care about citizenship, then we do speak out.
In 2016, I was surprised to learn how much Gloria Steinem had traveled. In talking with her, we learned how her time in India had an impact on how she approached her civic activism as a leading feminist rights organizer here in the United States. She reminded us how important it was to travel and to get to know the U.S. as well. A chance encounter she had in South Dakota helped her to see past appearances and presumptions when she was in town for a Native American conference, at the same time as the rough-and-tumble Sturgis motorcycle rally was going on nearby.
So I couldn't figure out why there were all these folks in black leather and tattoos and chains and nose rings and so on the plane. But once we got there, we discovered that, you know, this is this huge, huge global motorcycle rally, which I have to say, even though we were strong, daring women, we thought kind of worried us because we'd seen movies. We understood or thought we understood that motorcyclists were maybe a source of danger. So when on the last morning I went into the dining room of my motel trying to be calm and open-minded in a room full of leather and chains and tattoos, I was totally surprised when a woman, an older biker chick, came over to me and said, "You know, I really enjoy Ms. Magazine," she said. I just sort of couldn't believe I was hearing this. And that she said her husband also read it sometimes now that he was retired. And it turned out she had recognized Alice Walker, who I was traveling with, which also I never would have imagined. But she looked out the window and pointed me towards a purple Harley very proudly because late in her married life, she had finally been able to travel on her own motorcycle as opposed to on the back of her husband's motorcycle. And that was her purple Harley. She said, "Oh, you should see my grandkids when Grandma rides up on her purple Harley." It made me, after she left, I thought, you know, we all have inside of us a purple Harley, a kind of freedom.
Yeah.
And we have only to find it and ride.
During the height of the COVID pandemic, when most of us were locked down at home for a while back in 2020, we checked in on friends to hear how their communities were coping and what it was like to not be able to travel. As a prolific traveler, Pico Iyer explained from his home in small-town Japan that the pandemic offered him a similar silver lining as I found where I live. Taking short walks in his neighborhood gave him a chance to finally look at his surroundings more closely and to think of it as home.
When my wife and I were stuck in our apartment in Japan for many weeks, we started taking long walks in every direction, which we've never done, though we've lived in that apartment for 27 and a half years. And we found just 5 minutes down the road, beautiful bamboo forest with flowering cherry trees all over, and nightingales teaching their young to sing, just 3 blocks from our apartment. And we hadn't found it in more than a quarter of a century. And just as you say, I've always felt that the beauty of travel has less to do with the destination than with the fresh and open eyes we bring to it, and that indeed in our own neighborhoods there are wonders that would be amazing to people coming from elsewhere. And it's just a matter of reminding ourselves of that. And so I've been grateful to this moment for opening my eyes to what is really always around us.
Many of our guests over the past 20 years have told us about some incredible travel adventures. From the Johnson Space Center in Houston, astronaut Katie Coleman explained how 6 months of living and working on the International Space Station literally gave her a new perspective on Earth, our island home.
It gives me a lot of faith in people themselves. I know that after being up there and looking down at the Earth, it's not that I'm not patriotic, but I felt a little sort of, you know, just to think that I should put an American flag on my shoulder or think of myself as from one place, it just felt so limited when we're really all from the same place.
Oh, baby. Obviously, this is just a small fraction of the conversations we've enjoyed bringing to you in 20 years of travel with Rick Steves. What a gift it's been to learn from so many fascinating and different people. Coming up, we'll revisit a conversation I enjoyed with actor Martin Sheen. That's right after we find out what's new with author Paul Theroux. Don't forget, you can explore hundreds of hours of more great topics and guest interviews by digging around in our show archives. It's at ricksteves.com/radio. What's been your favorite moment from the show? We're always glad to hear from you by emailing us at radio@ricksteves.com.